from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Yoga, a practice popularly known to relax, calm, and make people feel better and stronger, is at the center of a new investigation from KQED, which exposes an industry grappling to rein in alleged accounts of sexual misconduct and abuse. Yoga is a multi-billion dollar industry with millions of practitioners, and despite that, yoga is largely unregulated with little oversight, which makes reporting abuses even more difficult. Coming up on Forum, we discuss how the Me Too movement is changing Bay Area yoga, and as always, we hope to hear from you with your questions or your own experiences. It's all coming up after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. According to a KQED investigation, the Bay Area's yoga community is struggling with how to handle accusations of sexual misconduct by some of its teachers and leaders. And despite yoga's popularity, the practice remains largely unregulated, with no accreditation required for instructors or studios. Today on Forum, in this hour, we explore how the Me Too movement is changing Bay Area yoga and what can be done to make yoga a safer space. And we're joined today by KQED's Maria Leitzinger, who led this month-long investigation, and we want to hear from you. Have you ever felt unsafe or uncomfortable in your yoga practice, and do you think more oversight or regulation is needed? You can call us now at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us forum at kqed.org. And Miranda Leitzinger, good to have you with us.
Thank you.
And congratulations on this story. This is good investigative reporting and important, as many people will discover, I hope, in the course of this hour. Let's talk about the investigation from sort of a wide scope, if we could begin. What led you into it and what you discovered?
Last fall, just as the Me Too movement was kicking off, we decided to put a call out to our audience in the San Francisco Bay Area to see, you know, to hear their Me Too stories. We got about 120 responses, and one came in that stuck with me. It was a woman who was alleging that her yoga mentor groped her during a massage that she had understood to be a part of her teacher training program. I myself have been a practitioner of yoga for 15 years, and it just struck me I'd always considered it a safe and sacred space. But seeing this and thinking about it, it made me question, could there be unsafe spaces in yoga? So we went, so I decided that we should go a little bit further. We put another call out for specifically stories about yoga, Me Too stories. We got a few more stories, and we started to widen and look at the industry overall. As I, you know, I looked at this question, were there unsafe spaces? And this led me to looking at regulation and licensing and seeing that there really wasn't much out there.
And the history probably goes back a long way in terms of this kind of activity.
Yes, it goes back decades. One of the allegations we received was about a San Francisco-based teacher who had been accused of sexual misconduct in the 80s and then had again been accused in 2013. And so a number of these, there's a number of reports that go back decades, and most of our stories, though, were from present day.
Let's actually hear the experience of one of these people that you talked to. This is Ann West, and she's recalling what she alleged happened while doing a backbend in a class by a man named Manoso Mano, who is a major figure in yoga locally.
Yeah, well, also in the Iyengar world, he's a big figure, yes.
Let's hear.
The whole class was kind of a bit chaotic, and nobody would have been able to see what anybody else was doing. And at that point, he came over, and that's when he placed his hands on my breast, or on my rib cage, actually. And then he stroked his hands over my breasts and over my nipples in a way that could only be described as a caress.
And there was also talk about his doing verbal abuse and other kinds of things. And you spoke to him and got a response?
I tried to speak to him. He had a spokesman who I spoke with, and he denied the allegations past and present. And he also, there was an article that was published about these allegations in 1991 in the Mercury News' West publication, and he denied, he said that that article was inaccurate.
These are anecdotal allegations, though, really, aren't they?
In what way do you mean?
Well, in terms of what we're just hearing now, the kind of charges that that came forward. They're not being prosecuted.
No, they're not. The difficulty, and I did speak with an assistant district attorney who specializes in sex crimes, and the difficulty with these stories, a lot of them, is that it ultimately is a he said, she said. When Anne, for example, who we just heard from, was in a backbend pose, so was everyone else. So no one could see it. So you need someone to corroborate what happened. So that makes it difficult for prosecutors to, you know, to feel that they could get convinced 12 jurors to convict.
And she also, in this next cut we'll hear, feels that there really wasn't anyone that she could go to or that could warn her about this. Let's hear.
We weren't forewarned that essentially this predator was in our midst, and we weren't able to make an informed decision as to whether or not we were even going to walk into his class.
That's something that you discovered, I imagine, over and over again, huh?
Well, especially in this case, because of the fact that there were prior allegations that had actually been printed. And, you know, he says that he voluntarily left the San Francisco Iyengar Institute. The article had reported that he had been suspended, but he said he voluntarily left. So it was known. And through my reporting, we actually did get a document, a letter from senior Iyengar leaders in California, when another woman who said that he alleged that he groped her in 1986, she said, why is he, you know, being invited to a convention in 1990 when this is all going on? And so Anne is really reacting to the fact that decades prior, people in the community and senior leaders in the community, this document that we got even says that Mr. Iyengar himself, the founder of Iyengar, was aware. So she's saying why, you know, she was in a class in 2013 when this happened.
So where does oversight or licensing come into this? Where, for that matter, do we find I assume anyone can open a yoga studio and can do it with impunity.
I know that we're going to be hearing from Judith Lassiter soon, who has talked quite a bit about this, and I interviewed her for the article, but there is no licensing nationwide. As Judith says, you could have read a book on yoga, and you could be a yoga teacher. She told me, you know, all you need to be a yoga teacher in the United States of America is students. There's also very limited regulation of these yoga teacher training programs. These teacher training programs are really what help a lot of studios, you know, get into profit area to meet, you know, their bottom line. And so there's a few states that do limited regulation of these programs, but otherwise those are also unregulated. So there's really not a lot of guardrails in place.
Minnesota, Oklahoma, I think.
Minnesota, Oklahoma.
Washington.
Washington. California has very limited. So there's this looking at a broader portfolio of study, which is really like massage schools or other East Asian practices. There are no yoga studios. It's actually about 15. And there's certainly more than 15 yoga studios in California.
What about the argument, though, that touch is an important part of yoga, the touching and so forth, that it's integral, in fact, many would argue, to yoga?
Well, and in fact, that is what one of the teachers I spoke to who was accused of, you know, of misconduct, did talk about the fact that, you know, touch is a way that enables the muscles to learn the pose. And yoga is made up of all of these poses, right? So giving a hands-on adjustment to get into the right pose is really to learn the practice. But it's definitely in the last few years, we've seen these changes start to come about where teachers are starting to ask if students want to be touched. It used to be just kind of a implicit consent given when you walked into the studio.
Miranda Leitzinger here with us in studio, engagement producer for KQED. And I'd like to actually hear someone else who Miranda got to interview. And this is a young woman named Eka Ekong. She's a yoga teacher in Marin County, and she sustained injuries from an allegedly aggressive adjustment during class. And I'm talking here a little bit about why people are drawn to yoga.
We all come to yoga because something hurts. Something hurts. Maybe we don't know what it is. Maybe we can't put a word or a name on it. Maybe your heart hurts. Maybe your low back hurts. Something hurts. And you're putting your trust in this person. Not that they have to fix it or heal it, but you're giving them, you're saying, I'm here. See me.
Let me go now to Shannon Roach, who is Chief Operating Officer of Yoga Alliance. And we should mention, just for some background here, that there was and there have been a number of attempts in the past to, well, prescribe a code of conduct. Yoga Alliance, actually back in the late 1990s, had a misconduct policy and a procedure for handling these kinds of complaints. But right now, Shannon Roach, you say you don't want to do law enforcement?
Well, first of all, Michael, thank you for having me. And Miranda, thank you for the incredible work you've done here that's really enabling these conversations to begin to overcome sexual misconduct. Michael, we are not the yoga police. That is accurate. We are, however, solving the problem of sexual misconduct in yoga our top priority. Our priority is supporting the creation of safe, inclusive, and accessible spaces to practice yoga, and we are working hard every day to make sure that happens.
What are those steps, particularly in the light of the fact that there really is no regulation?
Sure. Well, we are approaching this challenge from two lenses. One is through unity in yoga, and the other is through safety in yoga. The unity is being manifested in part through a year-long project where we're convening the global yoga alliance community and really the global yoga community to review the standards for the teacher training programs that you've mentioned and to take steps like clarifying our code of conduct and scope of practice and more. We've actually been on a listening tour around the U.S. and several countries to hear from our community about their concerns and how they'd like to see this reflected. On the safety side, we're addressing that in a number of ways. We have strengthened and clarified our policies, in particular the sexual misconduct policy that we stood up in February of this year for the first time. And also we're making sure that we're enforcing those policies.
What's the argument, though, against regulation? I mean, just having regulation be really preeminent in all this.
It's a great question. You know, anyone who practices yoga knows just how large and diverse the community is and the body of knowledge and the kinds of ways in which one can practice. Our opposition to regulation is to overburden some regulation that could compromise the public's access to yoga in all of its diverse forms. We know that this breadth and depth of the practice is incredibly important to our members. It is our position that government licensure requirements could exclude certain forms of yoga practice and stifle creativity and innovation.
Shannon Roach is Chief Operations Officer with Yoga Alliance. Miranda, what's your response to what you're hearing?
I know that they are working, and a number of people have talked about that. How Yoga Alliance and a number of other, prominent figures in the community are working to create, make this a safe space that everyone believes that it is, and that there are different approaches. That there are some people who think that the studios need to really enforce a code of ethics and have, an independent committee that could, handle these types of allegations. There are others that are thinking that students really need to be empowered and told and given agency to make the safe the space safer.
Because most victims don't report, right?
Most victims don't report. And so I think the one thing that I have heard is that people are concerned that, Yoga Alliance and also, for example, the Iyengar Institute, INAUS, who I spoke to about regarding two teachers in this article, that, though they have processes in place for people to report sexual misconduct allegations, they just worry that, it doesn't really have much teeth because people won't know if someone had, their credentials with either of these organizations revoked. It's, done in confidentiality for legal reasons. So I think there's a feeling and also that you can still be a teacher without these credentials. So I think that's what people are grappling with, is that they understand that these efforts are being made and there is appreciation that, that these steps are being taken, but they just feel that these things don't have a lot of teeth because it isn't like a law enforcement.
Yeah, what about the need for teeth, Shannon Rocha? I go to you on that there are some places locally taking a hard stand. The playing studios in Oakland, for example, in Miranda's report came up in that vein, and maybe we can talk about that in the course of this hour. But anybody can just, set out and say, I'm opening a yoga studio now, right?
Well, it is true that that a trained teacher can open a yoga studio without a Yoga Alliance credential. We are not the makers of the yoga market, if you will. But we are working very hard to make sure that we're standing up enforcement mechanisms within our organization. We have revoked credentials when we have investigated and found credible allegations of misconduct. We also strongly encourage victims, understanding all the reasons that this is difficult, to report to law enforcement and to work with support organizations like the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. Making those reports is sometimes extremely difficult, but is also important for us to be able to have a sense of the scope of the problem and fix it.
What about changing the leadership, which is pretty much dominated by men, to women? That's already kind of happening, isn't it?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
The leadership that we're talking about here in the yoga movement has been, to a great extent, the problems, that is, with leadership being criticized, seem to focus on a lot of men. What about having women in more of a preeminent leadership role than they are presently? I mean, I understand that's already beginning to take place. Move it more forward, in other words?
It is beginning to take place, and I think you're seeing it in multiple levels, as is the case in many, many industries, which is refreshing, I have to say. Yoga Alliance itself has a largely female leadership team. We are also seeing leadership like that of Rachel Brathen, who goes by Yoga Girl on Instagram, who has taken it upon herself to highlight some of the stories and make sure that this conversation can happen. So I completely agree, and I do think you're seeing women stand up all over.
Shannon Roach, appreciate your being with us this morning, and thank you.
Thank you very much for your time and for your work.
Shannon Roach, again, is Chief Operations Officer for Yoga Alliance. Can we talk about a comment here with you, Miranda, if I can go to you? Christine says, like any activity where there are teachers and students, there exists the opportunity for power dynamic, and abuse of that dynamic often involves sexual misconduct. This is unfortunately true, possible in any activity that has a teacher, student, coach, player, boss, employee aspect.
Yes, I just think one of the things that's a bit different in yoga is that it is a teacher-student-teacher dynamic. And so when you enter into a studio, it has traditionally been a place of implied consent. You're giving over your trust to the teacher to help you on your journey. And it can be maybe a physical one or an emotional one, as we heard from Eka, that people are coming to yoga because something hurts. So you are putting trust into the teacher. And there's also in this space has traditionally been just touch, that you're allowed to make hands-on adjustments. So I think it's a bit different in that sense. And also what makes it additionally different is that there aren't these guardrails in place, and there's not a scope of practice for a teacher. So students, some of the women that I spoke to, they don't know, am I supposed to be getting a massage from my teacher? There's not this kind of thing in place. Am I supposed to go meet them at their home? There are these kind of things that are out there that are questions you'd probably would know the rules better in other situations with a boss, for example.
Let me bring Judith Hanson Lassiter into this. She's a physical therapist, co-founder of Yoga Journal Magazine, a yoga teacher since 1971, and author of Restore and Rebalance, Yoga for Deep Relaxation. And Judith, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you, Michael. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, haven't talked to you in quite a while. But as opposed to Shannon Roach, you're all in favor of regulation. And why? And what kind of regulation?
Well, I think it's a complicated question, but I think that we have to look at it from various points of view. When I started yoga, we were on the fringe, very much so, and no one paid us much attention. But then 20 years later, Hollywood discovered yoga, the mainstream discovered yoga, and suddenly yoga was everywhere. And the expectation of the public, I believe, is that when they see a teacher is certified, they have the same sense of a dentist, a doctor, someone who's working with your body and your mind. They have that sense. I mean, even my manicurist has state licensing. My massage therapist, my acupuncturist has to have some legal delineation of, and as Miranda just said, there is no scope of practice understanding legally or even informally in the United States of what it means to be a yoga teacher. If you tell me you're going to a dentist, I have a really pretty good idea of what that means. But the word yoga has been interpreted and used so broadly that it can mean meditation, it can mean crazy dancing and falling down and chanting. It can be an asana that's slow and soft or hard and heavy. It can mean almost anything. And so I wonder, in conclusion, I wonder if it's not time for us to look at some way of protecting the student as well as protecting the teacher with a clear understanding that does include some legal boundaries. It might be time in the Western context, if yoga teachers are professional health people, then maybe it's time to look at that.
Well, you work in physical therapy, and that's completely regulated, you know, by analogy perhaps, but I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about, well, let me get back to something actually historical here. You wrote a code of conduct for the Yoga Teachers Association back in 1995, did you not?
I was one of the people that did it. Now, there is a traditional ethical codes in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras called the Yamas and Niyamas, but there is no enforceability of them.
They're all voluntary without teeth.
Basically. Everything is.
Yeah. Also, the victims really shoulder the burden of this to a great extent, don't they, or to the full extent? The only way to stop this sort of thing would be to bring some kind of charges or go forward on that legal level.
At this point, you're right. At this point, there is no governing body like the Bar Association or the Board of Equalization. If I'm working as a physical therapist, and I don't really work as a physical therapist, though trained in it, and I work as a yoga teacher. But if I work as a physical therapist and I act inappropriately, a complaint can be brought to the Board of Equalization, State Board of Equalization of California, and I could be suspended, fined, lose my license. Any variety of things can happen with fair adjudication. So I have a boundary, and I know what I'm supposed to do. And you're right. In a yoga teaching world, there is no national body state regulation. You don't even have to have any training, Michael. You can just open a yoga studio and hang out your shingle and say, I'm a yoga teacher, and all you need is students. There's no controlling. There's a lot of excellent teacher training that goes on, but it's all voluntary.
Again, Judith Hanson Lassiter is a physical therapist, not practicing. She's a yoga teacher, and she's co-founder of Yoga Journal Magazine and yoga teacher since 1971, author of Restore and Rebalance, Yoga for Deep Relaxation. Judith, good to have you back with us on Forum. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Actually, I'm keeping you. I just was told by my producer that we've got you up until the end of the hour, so please do stay. I'll say goodbye to you then.
I'm happy to stay.
Great. Happy to have you. And also happy to hear from you, our listeners. We do want to hear from you. If you've ever felt unsafe or uncomfortable in your yoga practice, or you think more oversight or regulation is needed, or maybe not, let us know. And you can call us now at our toll-free number. The number to call, 866-733-6786. Please feel free to join the program. Again, the number, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post questions or comments you might have on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, or go to our Facebook page. We're going to continue with Miranda Leitzinger and with Judith Hanson Lassiter and with you when we return on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about yoga studios and reports of sexual misconduct and inappropriate groping and touching and all of that. And lack of oversight, really, in the yoga community. Miranda Leitzinger is with us. She's an engagement producer for KQED, who is behind this story. And we spoke earlier with Shannon Roach, who is Chief Operations Officer for Yoga Alliance. And Judith Hanson Lassiter is also with us, author of Restore and Rebalance, Yoga for Deep Relaxation, and a yoga teacher since 1971. And we do want to hear from you, and you can join us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or you can join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And Miranda, you had something you wanted to add from the conversation in the previous.
Yeah. In my reporting, so, you know, we did get a range of allegations from inappropriate massage to a violating touch adjustment in class, from drugging to statutory rape. And one of the things that I learned, and Judith had mentioned to me early on in my reporting process, is that, you know, even with studios, as you mentioned, flying studios, they had, you know, the owner told me she twice fired teachers over allegations. And I know, you know, I know that in my own reporting and with the teachers that we interviewed, one of them actually then went down the road and is working at other studios. So really in this question, again, of what can be done, there or what is not being done, this, you know, these teachers, if you get fired or you get dismissed from somewhere, you can still go down the road somewhere else and teach. So
you mentioned this, well, you at least prompted me to ask you about a story involving a teenager who was underage, and the yoga teacher kept saying, are you 18? And they were exchanging messages and along those lines. What was shocking about that story was he said to his partner, and I'm not sure who the partner was, we can Bill Cosby her, meaning drug her and you know, have sex with her against her will.
That was actually a second student who came forward after the young woman, the teenager, had gone through this process where she said that she told me that she felt that he had groomed her to have sex with him. She was underage, 17, summer before college. Text messaging with her. Pardon me, sorry. I switched over to text messaging with her and, you know, kept telling her that he needed to meet her in private and in person to explain something that he had to tell her. So she, they ended up, you know, having an encounter, and later she found out that another student, a woman who was, you know, twice her age, had, in a phone conversation with him, she alleges that he threatened that he and his partner should Bill Cosby her. So that prompted the first woman to come forward to tell her story and also to report it to the police. She said she worried about what could be happening to other students. Yeah.
Let's take our calls, and let's begin with a caller from Sacramento. Eric, you're on the air. Good morning, Eric.
Well, good morning. Great show. I've never done yoga, but I've done martial arts, and I know people who come to a training, and they bring their own video camera so they can see the mistakes they're making during their kata and improve it when they go home, and the instructors are making the corrections right there. I've never gone to a place where there isn't a camera. Inside, cameras are everywhere. Why aren't there cameras in these studios? If there's nothing indecent going on there, there should be no problem with having security cameras.
A good and important question, Judith Hanson-Lasser. Oh. What about cameras?
Take my...
Okay.
Well, I'm impressed you've never been somewhere with cameras. I think part of the thing about yoga is that it is, as martial arts can very well be, it's such an internal practice. And when I teach workshops, I ask people not even to bring their phones into the room because they're so distracted by the phones.
Hmm. Yeah.
That so there's no cameras.
And cameras are expensive. I mean, some of these are pretty short budgets when it comes to running a studio, right? I think that has to be seen in the whole equation, but it's an interesting thought to bring into the conversation.
Sorry, I'm having a sneeze.
And I God bless you. Let me get, we go from Eric to Erica. Erica, join us. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I want to just speak up as a long-term, short-term student of Manusos. I heard him accused on the radio by a woman who, though she sounds credible, I have no proof, and I've been a student in his classes over the course of 4 years. I don't go anymore. I'm an impartial observer, not a big fan, just somebody who's been in his class and always felt safe there. Even if he's a little bit gruff and unpleasant, I've always thought he was kind and instructive and useful, personally helpful to me, even though I know he personally doesn't even like me, and I don't personally like him, but he was always a responsible, good teacher to me, and I think probably thousands of women could say what I'm saying. That doesn't mean that Anne's allegation isn't true, but I just find it so hard to believe. It's just not my experience. I can't imagine that happening there. And I do imagine that things can be misunderstood very easily because there is a lot of hands-on stuff. All of my teachers have had their hands on various fairly private parts of my body in class because that's just how adjustments often go. And I've never felt like it was a violation or anything even remotely sexual.
What would you say to Erica, Miranda Leitzinger?
Erica, if you haven't had a chance to read the article, I would just encourage you to read the article. There is Anne's story. There's also another woman who came forward, Charlotte Bell. And there was another woman that I spoke to as well who also made allegations from 1986. There was an article in 1991 that Manusso denies the allegations in there in the San Jose Mercury News publication as well about a number of allegations. And there's also in my story, there's a link to an article from the California Iyengar leaders as well, talking about their awareness of the allegations and Mr. Iyengar's awareness of the allegations. So I don't know if you've been able to really see those other stories, and perhaps that can provide some other context there. You know, those were the stories that we got, and that that people that came forward. And so I would just encourage you to see it in the fuller context.
And let me thank Erica for her call. Did you want to comment, Judith? Go ahead.
Yes.
Does Judith have some
last? This is a difficult issue all around. It's a very problematic in our society, but these kind of boundary crossings have been going on, as we know, in all kinds of professions, probably for thousands of years. But the comment that, Erica, you made that I was interested in responding to was that, you, as I heard you, there was something about touching in very private parts of my body, but I didn't consider it sexual. Well, I had a bit of a reaction to that, because I don't think we have the right as yoga teachers to touch anyone's very private body. I personally, no matter what the intention is, so I personally ask permission every time I want to say, may I touch your shoulder? May I put my hand here? I'd like to touch your lower leg. And I specifically create an atmosphere in which people can say no, thank you. I say, you can say no to me. I raised three teenagers. I can hear no. I'm a soft landing for you. You don't have to be touched at all. And I always ask permission, even if students I've had for 30 years, I ask permission to touch them. So I make a very concerted effort to make sure that the atmosphere is one of safety, because you can't really relax if you're unsafe. And there are certain parts of the body that, like the inner thigh, that I will never touch no matter what, or the abdomen, or the buttocks, or the chest. It's not appropriate in a yoga setting. Even if your intention is a clear intention, I don't agree with that level of touching. I think it's inappropriate. And without specific, I don't believe in implied consent. In other words, some yoga classes, you're not touched at all. But I believe when someone walks into my class, they're not giving me implied consent.
Judith Hansen-Lasseter, again, is the co-founder of Yoga Journal and a yoga teacher since 1971. And let me go back, Miranda Leitziger, to you. Michelle asks, are yoga instructors unique among fitness instructors in terms of lack of accreditation or regulation? Seems like the same issues would likely apply to other fitness classes.
I think that it's personal trainers that don't have as well, but I know that Judith and I have spoken about this, so she might be able to answer.
Can you help us
more
here, Judith?
Well, I've actually taught yoga, done some training in IDEA, which is the National Organization of Personal Trainers, as far as I understand it. And my understanding was that they did have some form of certification. But I also would like to speak to the idea of yoga as fitness, and this is part of the whole problem. I don't think of my yoga class as fitness, although you may gain some physical fitness. To me, it's a much deeper and broader practice of introspection, inner awareness, silence. It's not just quote-unquote physical fitness, and this is true, I think, across the board, and all the different systems of yoga are very, very different. So I think that that makes a big difference if you walk into the class and you consider someone your spiritual teacher, almost in a revered sense, or you just consider them a trainer that puts you through your paces. There's a lot of difference in the type of relationship you have with them.
And we've got another caller joining us from Santa Clara. Shaker, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Michael. Great topic. Thank you for the topic. My comment is that the way yoga is practiced in this country is fundamentally wrong. Yoga is a Hindu tradition. It's a religious practice. And what has happened is the West somehow got hold of it. It's cultural appropriation. It has been removed from its roots of Hinduism, because Hinduism is not palatable to most Westerners for whatever the reasons are. And it's been trying to, it has been tried to force fit into secularism, Christianity, and Judaism, and it has become a big business.
We did a whole program on the commercialization of yoga. Forgive me, Shaker, but it's in our archives, and it might be worth digging up. That was actually a very informative program. But you're right. And it, how does that tie in with your perception of what we're talking about here in terms of the concerns over touching and groping and the like?
Yeah, so the connection to me is that because it's a big business, the people who are teaching it, practicing it, are not really practitioners of the proper form of yoga. I studied yoga when I was a kid. There were children, grown men, grown women in my class. Nobody was touched. It was practiced within the context of the yogas, the sutras, and the religious underpinnings that were there. And this was done in a big city like Bombay. That's where I grew up, and that's where this happened. So what is being done today? I mean, I don't know. Maybe we should call this some other name, but we should not sully the name of yoga and Hinduism in this context. And I really don't like the way it is being commercialized, as you said, and I will look up that program that you talked about.
And I thank you for the call, Shaker. It's good to hear from you. And let me read something that another listener named Celine writes. She says, this reminds me a lot of what the massage therapy community went through in California around regulation. At first I was resistant, but then I was sexually violated by a body worker and was grateful to have some form of professional recourse in place. It just sounds like this is an uncomfortable growth process for the yoga community. We'll go to more of your calls, and let's go next to Jesse. And Jesse, you're a yoga teacher, is that right?
I'm a yoga teacher, and I've been a certified yoga teacher for 6 years. However, my credential is not certified through the Yoga Alliance. I pursued a teaching credential that wasn't certified through the Yoga Alliance, mainly because I am a low-income person, and I cannot afford to take a lot of these trainings that are out now, where the minimum price will start at $3,000, and it can go up. But there'll be... I've seen trainings that are like even $10,000. And so my first reaction to hearing about the sexual misconduct and molestation or rape is that I don't hear about that happening with people in my situation. I hear that happening from people who are leaders of the organization, teachers who have created their own programs, people who are certified, people who are very much a part of the institution. So the idea to me that we need more regulation is just completely backwards. I think it's heavily regulated. I think that what we need is more local certification programs, not just one that exists in Virginia, but something that would be for Sacramento, where I would be like the Alliance for Sacramento, and the teachers could be credentialed based upon the kind of yoga that we're practicing here in Sacramento. There's no reason why we should be this united whole of something that really isn't united. People are practicing different yoga. There are different yoga teachers. There should be separate alliance systems and also stronger networks that are localized.
Okay, Jesse, thank you for that. I want to hear what Judith Hanson-Lassiter has to say for what you just put forward here. Judith?
Well, I'd like to respond about the Hindu yoga, and I really am very sympathetic to his comments, but I really want to reassure him and other listeners that there are really people who deeply are committed to the heart of the basic heart of yoga. I've studied in India, felt a very strong pull to Hinduism, and have practiced what I believe is following to the best of my ability the spirit of the teachings, and I continue to study. I'm not done. I still call myself a beginner. So I know there is a lot of commercialization of yoga, but I wouldn't say that everyone who practices or teaches is caught up in that, and many of us are sad about that. I like what she said. I'm not sure exactly in a practical way how that would work, but I definitely love that we're having a conversation about yoga. In fact, the first thing I think we should, Michael, have the conversation about is what is yoga? Because some people think it's just physical yoga, and that's just a very small part of yoga. It's much vaster than that.
Yeah, we also did a program on what is yoga.
Yeah, good.
So, I would also just like to add to, you know,
this is Miranda speaking.
Yeah. I would also just like to add, I mean, one of the comments that you read was talking about the uncomfortable growth process. And a number of the people that I interviewed said, yes, it's experienced. Yoga has experienced explosive growth. I mean, now that in 2016, there were 36 million people practicing yoga in this country. And, you know, with the last caller, what she was talking about, you know,
that's from only 16 and a half million back in 2004.
Exactly. So it's experience. And so it's sort of like a number of the people that I spoke to said it is in its adolescence. And it's, you know, they're trying to catch up and trying to figure out what can be done here. What are the solutions? But the last caller who called in, I mean, she was talking about teachers or people, leaders that she understood to be engaged in this sexual misconduct. Well, a number of the teachers that were accused in my article that were teachers just of a few years, and apart from Manuso, were not leaders or well-known leaders of a program. So I would just say that, you know, while this may not be widespread, or, you know, don't want to give the impression that this is all across yoga, but there is, it's not just, you know, only being allegedly perpetrated by leaders. It is happening. There are different teachers with a few years of experience that, you know, are being accused of this.
And just to get back to the surging numbers, it had Yoga Alliance, as of August 31st, said it had nearly 92,000 registered yoga teachers, surging from 9,700 in 2004, and over 6,000 registered yoga schools, jumping from 280 that same year. I mean, this is quite a gap. And let me get to some more of your phone calls. Let me get next to Mary, who's joining us from San Rafael. Mary, you're on. Morning.
Thank you. Several callers back, something hit me the wrong way. I'm sure the person didn't mean it that way, but she was talking about someone had been abused, or however you want to, whatever word you want to use it, want to use, but by a teacher. And she was saying that she knew him and couldn't believe it. And I'm sure she didn't mean it as to not believe this person, but I don't know. There was something in the way it was said that bothered me, and that's why I wanted to call, because that's the Me Too movement. Believe it. Believe it. It's happening. It has been happening for you know, it's just the way it is. And I just wanted to say that to that person.
And actually, one of the things, this is Miranda, I wanted to say that the difficulties that a number of women had that they told me in coming forward was that they felt that they wouldn't be believed in this community, that there would be recriminations, that they would be outcast from the community that really is a home. I'm myself, again, as a yoga practitioner, I know I have so many friends at the studios that I've gone to, and they did fear that they wouldn't be believed coming forward.
I wonder, though, what your response is to that, Judith Hanson Lasseter, because I think the caller was concerned with the way you were responding, sort of indicating that maybe the woman who was saying that what the caller said, well, in your response to that caller, you may recall.
I totally believe women, because this happened to me in a yoga class, and I've written about it publicly. Now, I think there's a little disconnect, because I didn't respond to her when she said she was talking about a specific person, and she said, you know, that she couldn't imagine that would happen. I didn't respond to that caller.
Okay, let me jump in here, because we're coming up on a break, and I wanted to read a couple comments before we do. Paul writes, I've known Manuso and his family for 40 years. I would like you to consider that he is one of the most accomplished and famous Iyengar practitioners in the world, has had a following that occasionally borders on groupie-like. He also happens to be tall, handsome, and possesses a magnetic personality. I can assure you that his personal ethics as a professional father and leader in the community have served him well in maintaining professional distance from fawning students. How then to reconcile the accuser's statements from decades ago with reality? And Leslie says, why not begin with a very simple rule? No sexual relationship permitted between student and teacher. If both parties want to go there, then they must end the teacher-student relationship. Yes, it's a regulation, but a very simple an obvious one. And I'd remind you that we are talking about reports of sexual misconduct exposed over lack of oversight in the yoga community and the whole question of oversight, monitoring, regulation in yoga studios and in places where yoga is taught. And the head of this investigation is here with us, Miranda Leitzinger. She's an engagement producer with KQED. We also have Judith Hanson Lassiter, a yoga teacher, with us as well. And this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. And if you want to support this radio station, well, for more information about how to do that, you simply go to kqed.org, and I urge you to do that and remind you that this is Forum on KQED Public Radio, and I'm Michael Krasny. And let's go to more of our callers. Let's go next to Kevin. You're on the air. Good morning, Kevin.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
I began practicing a few years ago, and was pretty intense at a studio, and I've moved to a home practice, and it's been mainly because of such a variance in the teachers from people that I would entrust my physical health to, you know, basically people that seemed very amateurish. So I think when you add heat into the room and some of the types of practices, it can become quite dangerous. You know, yoga is one of those suitcase terms where one class you're effectively meditating, and on the next you are, you know, doing some very serious workouts in heat. So, and my last comment, I did want to recommend a book called Goddess Pose, which kind of shows the yoga coming into the West and how much Western influences have played a part. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Kevin. Good to hear from you. And Justin says folks should go listen to this season's 30 for 30 podcast series about Bikram yoga and the sexual abuses the founder committed. And let me bring another caller aboard here. And that's Leonard from Concord, from Oakland. Leonard, welcome.
I just want to comment. I've been doing yoga for probably 25, 30 years. And it's always clear in some classes that people, when we do partner things, don't want to be touched. And the teachers that I've been with know not to touch those people. The kind of touching that's done is in no way offensive. But if some people are super sensitive, I think it's their responsibility, not the teacher's responsibility, to make it clear that they don't want to be touched. It's very simple. People have to take charge of their own lives.
What do you say to that, Judith Hanson Lassiter?
Well, I think that's definitely part of it. We need to make clear to students that they can say no. We need to create an environment in which people are not ostracized, which I've known to happen, seen it happen, that people were ostracized for not being willing to do what the teacher wanted them to do. So I agree with him. I think it's very important that students take, that human beings take responsibility for their own physical space and their own boundaries. But I do think, and this is where I disagree respectfully, is I do think we ought to train yoga teachers about projection, about what people might believe about them that is not necessarily true. And we need to train teachers about how to be respectful with touching.
What about Miranda Leitzinger, places, I alluded before, this place in Oakland, the Flying Studio, that actually have had some success with taking a hard stand? What do we find?
Well, she did. You know, she twice fired teachers over sexual harassment allegations, but it really cost her because the teachers were very popular. And, you know, she's an independent studio owner. And so she said, you know, she called it a bloodbath. And, you know, people were saying, you know, and she couldn't really speak, you know, under the law about what the allegations were, right? She was hamstrung. And so she had to weather those two periods, and she has. But It's very challenging, again, when there isn't, you know, legal credentialing with teeth or, you know, that's, you know, some of the things that we've talked about, her and I and others. But it's very difficult for them. So she maintains that stand, and she wants to, you know, people to know that her studio is a safe space. But it's challenging in this kind of environment.
There's a comment from a listener named Sarah who says, where there is an organization or money, there will always be corruption and those who take advantage of power. You can practice your own spirituality free from the corruption of organized religion, and you can practice yoga free from industry. Any thoughts from either Miranda or Judith on that? That may be a closing comment here, at least for the nonce. And let me extend thanks to you, Miranda. Again, congratulations on what you've produced here. Miranda Leitzinger, engagement producer for KQED. And thank you, Judith Hanson-Lesser. Good to have you back with us on Forum, physical therapist and co-founder of Yoga Journal Magazine and yoga teacher since 1971 and author of Restore and Rebalance, Yoga for Deep Relaxation.
It's my pleasure, Michael. Thank you. Thank you, Miranda.
Thank you, Judith.
And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and hours repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. I want to encourage listeners to continue this discussion online by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and also remind you that tomorrow, if everything goes according to plan, we'll be talking with the author of 21 Answers to 21 Questions. Actually, major intellectual figure is joining us, Yuval Harari, and I'm going a little blank on the title of his new book, but he will be with us in studio in our 9 o'clock hour, and he's a best-selling author of a number of books. His most recent one reviewed as the lead review in the New York Times Sunday Magazine by Bill Gates, no less, and he has many things to say, not only about some of the biggest issues of our day, but also about, well, some things that we're talking about here, like meditation related to yoga and all that and more tomorrow. Stay with us on Forum and stay with us on KQED, and Forum will be back tomorrow. And thank you for being a part of today's program. And for all of us here, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and the Bernard Osher Foundation, supporting higher education and the arts.